Welcome to the GOGcast, brought to you by XSplit Broadcaster. Simple yet powerful, live streaming and recording. And now, your host, Leah.
Welcome to another Girls on Games podcast. My name is Leah, and I'm your host for this show. This is episode number 151, and apologies, you're probably hearing my dog in the background, but you know, that's okay. He's a cute one. We've got another wicked episode for you this week. Topic of the show is an interview with Maya Moldenhauer. She is the artist and producer at Studio MDHR, which you probably recognize that name because they made a little game called Cuphead. That's right. A little game that is so gorgeous. So awesome in music, but man, is it punishing. I'm not very good at it, but that's okay. But before I introduce you to all the friendly voices I've got around my digital table, I want to remind you that you can subscribe to this wonderful show on iTunes, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and where we host it on Podbean. And if you manage to go in there and like give us a rating, like, we love you so much, because I know that does count in the whole like statistics and things. So thank you very much. All right, it's time for me to introduce you to all my friendly folks around this digital table. First off, Kat, how you doing?
I'm good. Long week. I'm happy it's almost over.
I'm with you there. Allie, how are you?
Not too bad.
Simon, what's up?
Yeah, fuck this week.
But you know what? We say that, yet we're all here together finally, because it's been a few weeks since we've had the opportunity to do that.
That's true. There's always been something over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's been for like a fairly calm month in the video game realm. Like February was super busy for us.
Yeah, and I think not just video game, just life in general has been pretty.
Yeah, it's all you can do. All right. Let's get into what games we've all been gaming. Kat, I'm looking at you, girlfriend. What are you playing?
Pretty much just Overwatch at lunch. I've been very so tired coming at home. And been catching up on movies and TVs, so mostly just Overwatch at lunch.
Have you tried the new character in the
PTR?
Yeah.
Brigitte? I don't know. I see the name
Brigitte.
Brigitte.
Yeah,
her name's Brigitte.
Brigitte. Yeah, nice. Well, like it's a Brigitte, but that like they pronounce it in the Swedish kind of way, so it's
yeah, I Brigitte. Know. But it's like my brain cannot like
me neither. It's
one
Brigitte
of my longest friends is like is called Brigitte, and
next
that's
one
how
is
Therese
and Jeanette. Those are the next heroes for Overwatch.
But pronounced like Jeanette.
All the Franco names.
Exactly.
So yeah, no, I haven't tried her on the PTR yet. I haven't installed the PTR on this computer, so.
People are saying she's really, really fun to play.
Yeah. Do you her look?
Yeah.
She looks badass. And then I saw this gameplay video of somebody on Twitter who just kind of like juggled the dead body of a Genji with her flail, and I was like, yes.
I read a lot of Tamora Pierce, and I'm currently reading fan fiction for The Protector of the Small, and she totally reminds me of her. So I'm kind of on like that kick right now.
Okay, can I just say that I'm super jaded about Overwatch, and it's really sad.
Why are you jaded?
Like, I saw someone like in Alice's Discord like posted a video of her like getting a play of the game with Pharah with their ultimate.
Yeah.
And my first thought was, congratulations, you press Q at the correct time. That's totally skills.
So
and I was
salty.
Like, I know. And like I was like, why am I so jaded about this game? But that's literally what it is. Like, congrats, you pressed Q and got the kills. You're the best. Congratulations.
Well, I press Q and I don't
then like
what?
Pressing the mouse at the right time.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I press Q and I don't get any kills. I'm really excited when I get kills.
I know, I
don't
know.
Really think so.
Wow, do you really want to get in that, Allie?
Sure.
Oh,
let's
snap.
Make Simon mad.
Oh,
that can
snap.
Be that. Can just
that,
be the,
that is not the topic of this show. This is not the
make
Simon mad show.
Of me getting Simon's goat, just purely to get Simon's goat.
God, oh, you don't man. Know what I'm laughing, but I'm actually dying inside. So that's pretty cool.
Y'all didn't see this, but Allie looked directly at the camera and like gave us all the little
Oh yeah, she's
eyeball
happy.
There.
Oh yeah, she's excited
she's,
about that.
She's prepared. She's prepared.
Oh yeah.
Allie, what are you playing, girl?
I'm actually playing Red Dead Redemption.
How you feeling about that?
I'm really enjoying it. It's my first time playing it. It's actually my first time playing a Rockstar game.
What?
Yeah, I don't
really
like. I don't know. They don't really make anything that appeals to me.
Okay, I can understand that. Like, I can understand that.
I don't like the idea of Grand Theft Auto. I think they did Bully too, right? Didn't they?
Yeah, I believe so. Yes.
Yeah, I also does not appeal to me. And to be honest, Red Dead Redemption didn't appeal to me at first. But I really needed something to play. And I've been kind of on like a backwards compatibility kick recently.
Okay.
And I was like, you know what? I haven't played it before. I mean, that's not true. I remember very distinctly renting it from Videotron and playing it for like 30 minutes and then never touching it again back on the 360. And we ended up picking it up for like $13 on sale. And we got Undead Nightmare at the same time. And
yes.
I was like, you know what? It's like, it's there. I'll give it a shot. And I'm actually really enjoying it. It's aged remarkably well. Like, it looks so good, and it plays so smoothly. I'm playing it on the Xbox One X, but I've also been playing it, like, when I want a game from bed, I play on, like, just the regular Xbox One. And it's a really solid game. I don't know if you guys have played it, but...
Oh, I have.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it.
As rare as that happens, I'm on the same boat as Allie. I've never played any Rockstar games. I've never played Grand Theft Auto, never played Red Dead, never played Bully. It just doesn't appeal to me.
And I really didn't think this one would appeal to me either, Simon, but honestly, it's so solid in other ways that the lack of dragons doesn't really bother me.
Lack of dragon? Yeah. I love that.
Normally, if something doesn't have like a fantasy aspect to it, I'm like completely Penny. Serious? Oh my god!
I hear the
Penny. Penny's new thing. For those who aren't aware, Penny's my dog. Her new thing is she likes to flip her food bowl and just dump all the kibble onto the floor.
Sure.
She just started doing it one day, and that's just what she. So that's what you hear in the background.
Bowie picks up just a mouthful and puts it on the floor, but it's only the first mouthful, and then he eats individual ones, and then he goes full ham on the rest.
Well, see, Penny will do that too. She'll take a mouthful, go to the opposite side of the room, eat it, and then go back and take another mouthful, and go back to the other side of the room and eat it, and like so, it takes her 3 hours to finish her meal. Anyways, I think she's done now. Are you done now?
They say dogs are smart.
Dogs are cute.
So yeah, like unless the game has some sort of fantasy aspect to it, whether it be like pure fantasy or like sci-fi, just some like unbelievability to it, I'm not normally interested.
Mm-hmm.
But Red Dead, it's really good. It's decent storytelling and it looks beautiful. And I've had some really, really hilarious moments. The other night I was playing and I took this like little mini, it's not even a side quest, it's just like a little side objective to go and get this woman's cart back from like a ruffian who had taken it from her. And so here I am like chasing down this ruffian. I like finally like I shoot him off the back of the cart. Like I was like, oh yeah, I'm such a badass. I like get in the cart and I drive it back to this lady, and literally I'm getting out of the cart and out of fucking nowhere, this mountain lion just comes around the corner and destroys this lady, and I fail the quest. It jumped on her like one shot, one kill. She was KO'd, and here I am standing there as like this giant like failure comes across like the screen. And I was like, bitch, what the fuck just happened? Like, it caught me so off guard. It happened all in like 3 seconds.
I forgot that they had like the text like you got in Grand Theft Auto in the game.
Yeah, it's just like failed, and I was like, it's not my fucking fault. A cougar came out of nowhere. I don't even know if they're mountain lions or cougars or what. But like, it's just been it's been nonstop fun. Like my first 5 minutes in the game, I got bit by a rattlesnake. I don't know how that happened, but I was like staggering around, and I was like, what happened?
How is that possible? When you get off in the beginning, you just get out of the train. Where did the rattlesnake
apparently
go from?
I apparently strayed too far off the path, and all of a sudden it was like. And I was like,
oh, man, I wish I had a chance to watch that replay.
Oh, man. Damn. It was pretty hilarious. But no, I honestly, I don't know why I held it so long playing it. I think it was just because I was like, I don't want to be no fucking cowboy. Turns out I actually like being a cowboy. So
there you go.
if you guys haven't played it yet and you're able to find it for pretty cheap, apparently you can get the physical Game of the Year edition at like EB Games for like $17.
Yeah,
it's not too bad. And honestly, it looks really good. I can't vouch for like any other consoles or PC, but I know it looks really good on Xbox. I'm sure it looks good on PC as well. But yeah, if you have downtime and you're looking to visit the Wild West, definitely take a look at it.
Hmm. Yeah. I just want to go visit the Wild Wild West.
Will Smith style?
Yeah, getting jiggy with it. Okay. Simon, what are you playing?
I've been playing some Rainbow Six Siege, of course, super obsessed. And I've been playing some Assassin's Creed 2. I bought the Ezio bundle. It was $15 on Xbox. And I just happened to like open the Xbox the other day to play some Monster Hunter. And I said, oh, there's a sale. So I went and checked. And I saw that. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. So I've been playing some Assassin's Creed 2. Which is the first one with Ezio. Because he's born. So I assume it's the first one. You know. And I don't know. It's been pretty fun so far. I'm less frustrated than I thought I would be about the shit controls.
Yeah, because they didn't fix them.
Yeah. No, honestly, like I thought I would be really annoyed by it, but it hasn't killed me yet, so I guess that's good. But then again, there's not a shit ton of guards. I'm like only a couple hours in, so I'm still fairly new. Like I think I just barely got the blade, so I'm like literally just starting. And no, it's been fun. Some goofy looking graphics at some point. I think there was like this meme where this guy has like big ass eyes. And I saw like, oh, it's the meme. I saw the guy at the meme. So that was an exciting moment.
Did you do the part with the lady who runs the brothel?
Yes.
Because her face is all sorts of
fucked. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, no. That was. I'm like, who modeled this thing? But no, it was. Animated this? Because it's like.
But she's supposed to be like this desirable, like femme fatale vixen, and then they close up on her face, and it's like a Botox accident. I'm just like, okay,
yeah,
so, right. PS2 game, right? Or PS early PS3, like something like
that. The beginnings.
Yeah, and it's a biggest air quote here remastered version. It's basically just an upscale of the textures. In some cases, it still looks like shit, but whatever. It's still a fun game, so.
Simon, I think it's really funny that you mentioned, like, bad controls in Assassin's Creed, because, like, I didn't write this in the document that we have for our podcast, but I'm realizing it's because I've literally tried to black this out of my memory.
What?
Before jumping into Red Dead Redemption, and literally the reason I was pushed to Red Dead Redemption is the fact that I tried playing Assassin's Creed Chronicles India.
Oh, yeah, I saw your stream.
Okay, so you guys know I'm, like, a ragey person.
No.
But not at all.
The thing is, I don't really get all that ragey in games. Like, I have a lot of patience because I don't like things to best me. So, like, I'll try things over and over and over again and, like, hate myself a little bit more every time. But I will, like, I'll keep at it.
This such a good emotional thing there to do
this
for your mental support.
Fucking game.
Yeah?
I have never been angrier or hated a game more in my life.
Seriously?
It's literally the first game I've ever rage quit because I was going to throw something across the room.
Dear Ubisoft, you've managed to make 8-Bit Blonde rage quit a game.
It was like a slow descent into madness, and it's all documented on stream. You can go back and watch the VOD. But it was just like, oh, this game is beautiful, because, I mean, it is a beautiful game. It's a great concept, this platformer, but it's like they tried to shove every fucking mechanic from a full-fledged Assassin's Creed game into a 2.5D universe where it just doesn't fucking work. And every single control, every single control is like purposely set up to watch you fail. And I thought it was just me. Like, I thought it was just me. I was like, maybe there's something wrong with me. Maybe all these years of gaming, I've missed, like, a very key component of playing video games. And then I made Ninja, my fiancé, try it. And he is a really good gamer. And he was like, yeah, no, this is bullshit. And then I started asking my community. And they're like, oh, no, you shouldn't have done that. That's just a really, no. Like, everyone knows, don't play that. And I was like, okay, apparently I missed the fucking memo. But why, Ubisoft, why?
Money.
Why? Good Lord.
To make a Vita game.
It was the
game.
Most unenjoyable experience of my life. Like, I finally got to what I thought was the end of the game. And then they took me to another country. And I was like, no, no, I'm done here. And so that
Fuck
was it.
That.
I was like, no. And so I literally, like, I stopped the game and, like, I took a deep, like, I was so defeated. My head was on my desk. I was, like, almost close to tears.
Jesus.
I was so frustrated.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know what? Congrats, Ubisoft. You broke me. Congratulations.
Well, then.
I apologize that we're laughing at this scenario and your anguish and the torture that you went through.
I just wanted to, like, chill with, like, the elephants because it was a really pretty game. And then it was no.
The India one?
Yeah.
Because there's India, China, and Russia, right?
Yeah, I've got China installed. Or I did have China installed. But as soon as I had that experience with India, I was like, yeah, fuck bye.
I played China and I enjoyed it. But I remember it being I remember it being a bit of a learning curve. But I don't remember if I finished it. I doubt I did.
I mean, I put like 8 hours into the game. It wasn't like I had just started. It just got progressively more frustrating to the point where I was like, am I a sadist? Is this 50 Shades of Assassin's Creed? No, we're done here.
No, so, there's too many other good games to play to waste your time doing that.
Well, that
if
was
you're
it.
Not into it. There that you go.
Just to prove my point, every single achievement is a rare achievement in the game.
Because
so that just
done it.
Goes to show that literally no one had the patience for that game.
Interesting.
Jesus.
End rant.
Wow, that was pretty good.
Mic drop.
Mic drop. 8-Bit Blonde has left the building. Not really. Allie, guess what?
What?
I've been getting my pants scared off me. By a little game called Outlast on my Switch. Who would have freaking thought that on the Switch I would still get my pants scared off me?
Did
God
you?
Yes. Damn.
But are you playing handheld? Because I feel like if you get scared, you just throw the fucking thing.
I almost did. So I'm sitting there next to Michael and he's like talking the phone. So of course I have headset on and I'm like sitting there. The dog's next to me and I'm playing the game and whatever. And it's the first goddamn jump scare in the game. And I... like literally arms flailing. It's luckily I'm sitting down and I have a thing on my lap, so like the Switch hit the blanket and everything, but like the dog jumped and I was like, oh god, this is not gonna go well. Who would have thought that you could like it goes to show to the design of the game, it's still scary even when it's on a tiny screen, you know what I mean? Like yes, I had the surround because of the headphones and things screaming at me and whatever else, but like oh my god, my poor emotional state after a very long week. I didn't need a jump scare, but that was okay. It's still fun.
Well, I'm glad that you're enjoying it. I'm glad that, you know, we have the mantle of like the first game to get penises onto the Nintendo Switch.
That's true.
Yeah, it's been awesome so far. I didn't think that the demographic would be there, or at first glance we didn't think that the demographic would be there, but there you have it. Apparently people like taking Outlast into public places on their handheld console. A bunch of weirdos. But it's been really great so far. I'm glad that you're enjoying it.
Yeah, it's a good fun, and Michael gets a good laugh every time I scream and jump a little.
Well, Outlast 2 is on its way.
Yeah,
so
it's gonna
keep
be fun.
An eye out for that one.
Cool. And I know a little bit more about Outlast 2 because of because playing the demos, that kind of stuff, and I'm not good with the scary games, so we'll see how the rest of this fares. I've also been playing a little game called Staxel. Mentioned it last week. It's a farming sim, but it has a little bit of like building and crafting. Like that's a fairly large mechanic. Actually, I think it relies a little more on that than it actually does the farming so much now. But it's interesting because the art style is like a cross between a pixel art and Minecraft. So almost like if you took Minecraft and you were able to slice it down into tinier cubes and then throw up like super bright colors all over it. So it's pretty. I like it. I'm having a lot of fun playing it. So
it reminds me a lot of Cube World.
Yeah, I can see that. Totally. I mean, it has the same kind of aesthetic, but they managed to make some pretty cool patterns and stuff out of it just by having like that additional grid in the squares that Minecraft doesn't have. Yeah. And like there's just flowers like everywhere. So it's super pretty and super bright and I like it a lot. But yeah, that's a lot of fun playing that. Alrighty then. It's time to get into news of the week. We're going to do that right after this break. All right, it's that time of the week. Time to get into the news. Simon, you get to go first. Why? Because you're in the document
I'm
first.
So
that's how we run this.
I never get to go first.
You do don't today,
mess
my
it
friend.
Up, Simon.
Don't ruin it.
I'm totally
don't ruin it.
Mess it up. Totally gonna mess it up.
What do you got for me?
So I got some pretty cool news, which excites me and confuses me at the same time.
Okay, do tell.
So this should be interesting. Yeah.
That sounds like your whole sex life.
Pretty much.
Oh! Name of Simon's sex tape. Boom.
Okay. Well,
we went broke, Simon.
Yeah. So I'm just gonna go. So you guys have a nice podcast.
Oh my god.
Anyways, as I was saying, so today in a Journal de Montreal eSport exclusive, which are two things I never thought I would say in the same sentence,
without vomiting,
they have announced that DreamHack Montreal 2018 will be not at the Place Bonaventure anymore, but at the Stade Olympique. The Big O. Which I think we finished paying in the 90s and it still sucks. But if the ceiling doesn't fall on us, that should be a pretty interesting event.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, Steph Harvey was also announced as the porte-parole. What's the
spokeswoman?
Spokeswoman for the event. So that's, you know, it's cool. DreamHack is a big, big industry, and Steph Harvey, local person, so it's pretty cool. And yeah, so from September 7th to 9th, 2018, will be at DreamHack Montreal. Will be at the Southern Epic. And where I am getting confused is in the numbers. So if you know what the fuck is happening, please tweet at me or talk in the Girls on Games Discord, which is girlsongamesdiscord.me/girlsongames. But if ever you want to explain to me how this works, please do, because I don't understand. So they're saying that it's going to be using the football configuration for the Olympic Stadium. So I, you know, did a bit of a Google search, and the football setup, well, a football field is 60,000 square feet. Place Bonaventure, in the way that DreamHack was set up, is 200,000 square feet. So right there, there's 140 square feet that's missing. Now, Leah was saying that they're probably going to put people in. You know, it's not strictly the football pitch. So there's
the
like
stands.
One on the side. She's saying in the stands. I'm saying she's fucking crazy. But
why am I crazy? Why is that crazy?
I don't understand how it's going to work in a stands. But, I mean, I guess that's what's going to happen. Because
I have a feeling that what they'll do is they'll kind of like split up the football field, and they'll probably have screens dead in the center, because usually what they do at Place Bonaventure is they put the screens all up against the sides and kind of build it so that the middle area is where you can move around.
Yep.
Well, if you decide to kind of invert that and take the screens and put them in the middle,
yep,
so that they're back to back and then pointing out, and then you got people in the stands so that you can have the stage in the bottom and the people in the stands, and then use like the other end as like the BYOC part, you could totally do it, and then you can have different games going on at the same time and use the stands and the functionality that they're supposed to be. Because if you set it up any other way, you're kind of restricting where people can sit.
Probably. I don't see it. I don't see it at all in my head. It doesn't make any sense. But, I mean, we'll see in September of this year how they're going to set this up. And the other thing that was confusing me is that the article Journal de Montréal said that last year DreamHack Montreal had 1,100 people. And that they're
1,100 people?
1,100 people. And that they're expecting 1,500 people for this year. Which, again, is confusing me because LAN ATS just announced that they have 3,250 people at ATS. Which makes no fucking sense.
Under promise, over deliver?
I don't understand. No, I
that's
mean,
not
I,
a lot of
I
people.
Am, I am convinced.
No, at the Olympic Stadium.
I am convinced that there wasn't 1,100 people last year at DreamHack Montreal, or even the year before. I'm convinced that there was at least a TS number, if not more. So
somebody got the numbers wrong.
That's what it sounds
what
like.
Guessing, but
yeah,
then
this
again,
is what happens when you give
fucking
the info to Journal de Montréal.
Try to find info. No, but they say that this information comes straight up from Max Saint-Ange, who is like the big one of the big boss at the SMG.
Yeah,
so
I know him.
I'm like, I don't, I don't understand. Unless they mean that they want to grow from 1500 as opposed to 1100 from last year. I guess that's what they mean. I don't understand. Like, I guess maybe that's what they mean. Like, instead of having 1,100 new people, they want to have 1,500 new people. Maybe that's what they mean. I don't fucking know. Yeah. It's confusing as fuck, and it's impossible to find numbers of DreamHack attendance online. I've looked and looked, couldn't find anything. So if you can explain to me what the fuck is going on with that announcement, I will be more than glad to listen to it.
You know, I have to read it back through again. I only glance through it, and yeah, sometimes when I read in French, I get confused.
But like he says, we are augmenting the number of players from 1,500 compared to 1,100 in 2017.
But that's players.
It's players. That's not attendance. That could be BYOC players and match stuff. That's probably where you're getting that number.
There we go. That probably makes sense.
That doesn't include just the people that walk in to watch the things.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So like us.
Probably what it is then. Okay, cool. Yeah, that makes more sense.
Okay, good. There we go.
Anyways, and other good news. Well, we already know that StarCraft WCS will be there, which is a big major in the major title in the circuit. And then we'll have the premier Street Fighter V event, which also a big news. We don't have any CS:GO news. I'm expecting probably not a DreamHack Masters, but probably another DreamHack Open, which will be pretty cool. We had some cool teams last year. And I am 99% convinced that we will see a Rainbow Six Siege minor event, because DreamHack is the minor event host for all the minor event for Rainbow Six Siege. So I'm 99% convinced that we're going to see a Rainbow Six Siege minor event at DreamHack Montreal in September. Because it makes sense, because the Paris major is in August. No, August or June, I don't remember. And then there's a big lull until next year's Sixth Invitational. So it would make sense that it would want to come back to Montreal, especially for an event like DreamHack. So.
Would it be weird to have Stephanie Harvey, as the spokeswoman and not have a CSGO thing?
No, they're 100% going to have a CSGO thing. My question is, will it be a Masters event, which is a $500,000?
Okay.
I don't remember. Anyways, a big amount of money.
Okay.
Or an Astro Open, which is the smaller version. Still good teams, but not a quote-unquote premier event when it comes to DreamHack. So, like, I think they only do two or three Masters, DreamHack Masters CSGO a year. Mm-hmm. And I know they've announced Marseille so far. And I think that's the only one they've announced. So, and Marseille is in June as well, I think. Okay. So it would make sense that it could be September. And at a big venue like the Olympic Stadium, who knows? So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Cool.
But that would be cool if it was a DreamHack Masters in Montreal. So see what happens.
I'm really curious to see how they could deck out the Olympic Stadium.
Me too.
To look crazy like that, because I mean, it is an older building. It's designed for sports, therefore not as much wiring, especially in the middle of the field.
And let's be honest, it hasn't aged all that well.
Well, we know that. That's part of it. That's
but
part
not
of the problem.
Just the fact that it's falling apart, but like when we last time I was there was with AD. Yeah, I went for Al's games there.
Yeah.
They had an Alouettes game.
And Impact played as well.
Yeah. And it was weird.
Last time I went there was for the Food Truck Festival.
Oh yeah.
About 2 years ago, and just like it was just outside of of the Olympic Stadium, but it felt like it felt like a weird post-apocalyptic sort of setting.
Well, you say that, but it's true. It's been used in movies. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Warm Bodies, but it actually a lot of it shot there.
What I was thinking. I didn't mention it because I didn't think anybody would know what that was, but yeah, exactly. Like it literally did feel like a weird ghost land of cement. I don't know. I really hope that they end up like decking it out and setting it up properly, because it's
very
uninviting.
I mean, inside it definitely will be, that's for sure. Because, you know, just Pas Badavantsoro, the way they set it up at DreamHack was fucking cool, you know? But, I mean, it is DreamHack. They've been doing this shit for 15 years now. So if anyone can do it, it's probably them. So we'll see what happens. We'll see how it turns out.
I'm curious. Very
super
curious.
And I'm setting up a Rainbow Six Siege team with some friends, so I think we're going to go there and actually spend the weekend.
Nerds! Yay! Just kidding. It's super cool.
My first LAN since ETS 2004, so this should be interesting.
Can we come as your cheerleaders?
Hell yeah.
Yay!
I mean, we're not going to compete at any interesting level.
Doesn't matter. We're just going to stand behind you with pom-poms. Kat, what do you got for me?
Well, apparently it wasn't done already, because today Sony announced that it will no longer include the PlayStation 3 and the PlayStation Vita in the free games that comes with PS Plus as of March 2019. So I'm like, they were still getting free games?
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, what?
They were. Every time I'd look and see what was coming up. But I guess this just goes to show. We kind of knew PS3 was going to be on the way out. But the PS Vita, it's been nice knowing your little handheld.
Well, it's officially discontinued. It's not in whatever's being sold on the market after it's sold. It's gone forever. Not that anybody's buying them. But, hey. In 1 year, it's just going to be two games that are going to be offered for free. And they're going to be PS4 games. That's it.
No wow. PSVR games? Do they give out PSVR games with?
No.
Whatchamacallit?
Unless they lock PSVR in the PS4 games. But I've only seen like older games. But they say that...
Yeah,
they say that the other benefits of being a PS Plus member will continue.
Okay.
So online play and things like that and discounts and whatnot will all continue. It's just you're not going to get two free games. What I'm wondering, though, is if you've built a library of these free games on your PS3 and your PS Vita and you keep paying the PS Plus, even though you're not getting new games, are you still able to play your back catalog for free?
You should be able to.
Or you're locked out?
I'm pretty sure you'd be able to, because it's actually just like a trigger that goes off. And as long as you've got the service, if they say everything else is still, you know, open, why wouldn't you? Right. Because it's just they're just essentially saying we got nothing else to offer you because these consoles are done. So we're going to stop. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And it says that they're trying to cushion the blow by offering great games for March 2018. And I was like, what's a great game? But Bloodborne is going to be free in March.
Bloodborne! It's fun for all. Bloodborne, it's fun for all.
You died.
I don't know. I think it's kind of a bummer. Like, I'm not a nostalgic person, but I really do appreciate the whole backwards compatibility. Sorry, Simon just made a really funny face. Appreciate the whole, like, backwards compatibility thing. Because, I mean, even... Like, I mean, there's games we miss. Even playing a lot of games, there's games we miss. And so having services like PS Plus and Xbox Live Games with Gold and stuff like that, you sometimes get the like opportunity to pick up a 360 or a PS3 game that you missed the first time around, right? And yeah. It ends up being really good regardless.
Well, I'm not saying it's anything about that. It's more along the lines of they've done it for so long. They've run out of games that they want to, or they don't feel it's worth their while to put the money into paying for those games to have them free. Because essentially, they have to shell that money out to other folks, right? And if they don't see enough return on investment of subscription on PS3 accounts, then why would they bother?
Oh, no, for sure. Like, I'm sure there's a smart business decision behind it. It's just kind of a bummer.
It is, yeah. But I mean, PlayStation doesn't have the backward compatibility system of Xbox. So
no,
if you want free PS3 games, you needed to have a PS3 hooked up.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. They probably, yeah, and that's probably where the return on investment comes in, where they just didn't see it paying backwards, you know, as much as
it
could potentially be.
The gold games, if they have the 360 games there and you can play them on your Xbox One.
Yes.
Yeah, see, that's different. It's only They're only restricted to PS3 or PS Vita unless it's one of those games that has crossplay. Which, you know, there's only so many games that have crossplay in that nature where you get it on one console, you have it on all, right? Mm-hmm. Though sad, because I do like my Vita, but my PS3 has been gone away for quite a while. Yeah. Or disconnected. It's still in the cabinet.
Mine died.
Oh, no. Yeah.
My fatty's still kicking. It's just not plugged in.
Yeah, I have one in a box somewhere.
Allie?
Yes?
What kind of news you got for me this week?
I've got some very magical news, guys. So basically, what happened today was we got the first official full-length trailer for Harry Potter Hogwarts Mystery, which is the new Harry Potter mobile game that's coming out in 2018. They announced that Google Play pre-registration is now available in the same announcement where they revealed the trailer. And so this is the game that's being brought to us by the newly formed Portkey Games, which is going to be creating Harry Potter or Potter-centric titles going forward. Mm-hmm. And the trailer looks pretty freaking good. You know, just shows a young woman sitting on a park bench getting her Hogwarts letter, being sorted into her house, and then, you know, it shows a little bit of gameplay. And it looks pretty interesting, but I'm excited for this one. I very, very rarely have my attention kept, you know, very effectively with a mobile game. And I'm hoping that this will change that, because I'm such a big fan of Harry Potter. I'm hoping that this one will really, you know, get under my skin. But yeah, it looks pretty decent.
Oh, God.
I'm excited.
I just pre-registered. Niantic's doing the other Harry Potter
mobile. Yeah, we don't talk about that.
The AR one.
Yes. I was thinking,
focus on this one. It's the first Harry Potter game.
Stop derailing my...
Exciting!
You know, so basically they haven't really come out and said it, but this kind of looks like a mobile MMO, maybe not quite, or a mobile MO. Multiplayer online. Maybe not so much on the massive side, but you know, it looks like you get your letter, you go to Hogwarts, you get sorted, you take your classes, you build your repertoire of spells. So it looks like a typical RPG experience with a Harry Potter skin. And
so wouldn't you call it an HPG, a Harry Potter game? So it's an MMO HPG?
You're so exhausting. But yes, let's call it that. But yeah, no, you see like a lot of familiar faces. You've got McGonagall, Dumbledore, you've got Snape, Hagrid. It looks like there's quite a bit of character customization. It looks like you can duel with other players. Sorry, Kat, what did you say?
You're supposed to be able to make your own wizard. It's the first game where you make your own wizard.
Yeah, it looks like there's decent character customization. You can duel with other players, all kinds of stuff. And it looks like there's like some story missions. At one point, we see the player character unlocking this big ice gate, and it looks like she's fighting an ice giant or an ice knight. And so that looks like there's probably some story-based stuff instead of just, you know, like, oh, you know, just keep plucking away at your skills. But I'm pretty excited for this one.
It looks just pretty. Registered. I like the style. Oh, that's right. You got an Android.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, well, I like the style.
Pre-registration began a couple months ago for iOS, so make sure you get in there too. But now I guess they're going to be pushing it out to the Google Play Store. Apparently, the rumor is it's available already in Australia.
What?
Yeah. So
why?
I have my phone on me now. I'm looking it up.
But yeah, so definitely keep an eye on it, guys.
It looks so pretty. I think I might actually get it on iOS just so I can play on my big old iPad Pro.
Yeah.
All 12 inches of it just like tap, 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 being a
Ayo.
Wizard.
But no, it looks pretty decent, and I'm really hoping that there's finally a mobile game that's gonna keep me occupied for like more than 4 hours and then I forget about it. Because Animal Crossing, you didn't accomplish that.
No.
It's a mobile game.
I can't find it. Where is it?
What the hell is that for? That's not Leah.
It's me.
Someone just took over Leah's body.
Yeah, she's a demon. There's probably demons in Harry Potter or whatever, so she's that now.
Oh my God. I mean, have you never read or watched Harry Potter?
No. No, not true. I read the first three books, and then I saw the first two movies.
Oh my God.
See these colors behind me right here? You can borrow them anytime you want.
Listen to the audiobooks.
I got the audiobooks. You'll love it.
I'm more of a science fiction kind of guy.
Exasperated sigh from all three of us.
I love science fiction, right?
All right. It's time to get into topic of the show before we get more down that hole. All right. This week we've got an awesome interview with Maya Moldenhauer. You know her as the artist and producer at Studio MDHR, who worked on a little game called Cuphead. So, it's time to get into that right after this break.
Hey, So how's it going?
Pretty good. Maya, thank you so much for joining me for this quick conversation about everything you've been doing and been up to with Cuphead.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for reaching out and wanting to chat on Twitter and stuff like that. So I was like, wow, cool. Yeah, let's do it.
Awesome. Yeah, I've been following everything you guys and your team at the studio have been working on, and of course playing Cuphead myself, though I'm not very good at it, but I think it's because I get distracted by your animations.
That's a common theme. That's a common theme I keep hearing of people being like, I just sometimes I get lost in watching something, and then a bullet will come and just get me, and I'm like, oh, you can't watch.
So yeah, first off,
we're watching like YouTube videos.
Yeah. I want to congratulate you guys. You've been doing so well. You just got 3 awards at DICE. I saw that you're nominated, or the soundtrack is nominated for a Juno. Who would have thought?
Yeah, insane. That kind of thing. So first of all, like when it comes to nominations and awards and things like that for the game in general, that's completely blowing our minds. I am not kidding you when I tell you that we just never, ever in our wildest dreams, stretch goal, everything, ever foresaw this happening.
Wow.
So every time we get a notification about something like that, we're just like jaws on the floor, like, holy cow, what's going on? And secondary to that, when it comes to the music especially, that's so near and dear to our heart. It's a lifetime friend, Christopher Madigan, who composed the entire soundtrack. And so to be able to see him, you know, really get recognized for the work that he did, which I think is just phenomenal, I would get, like, extra excited for him because it's like I'm just so happy for him.
We got the chance to speak to Chris, I think it's before the game came out last year, and the fine folks at Xbox Canada had sent us one of the copies of the records, and yes. I work at a radio station in Montreal called Chom 97.7, and they had a turntable set up, so I went right upstairs and put it on the turntable.
Oh my God, that's awesome. That's so good to hear. Do you like it?
Oh yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, no, I feel like I'm like, am I biased or do I actually like it? I can't tell. But I have it in the car and like my whole family actually likes it. So I'm like, okay, I think it's pretty good.
All right, well, I want to get a little info about you and your background because I know you're not traditionally an animator or an inker in that sense. So how did you get into this video game realm?
I know. It's a pretty wild story in hindsight, when I think back to like how all the dots connected. But I went to school for something completely different. I have a degree in biomed, minor in physics. Was thinking of going into med school or maybe possibly optometry or something like that. Realized I can't even get like a paper cut without being super squeamish. I'm like, so that's probably not the best path for me. my parents are very traditional and they're just kind of like, there are 3 things, doctor, lawyer, engineer, pick one. You know, they're of that kind of mindset, and so I was like, okay, let's do this. Quickly after I realized that possibly wasn't the path that I'd be very successful at, I went into IT instead, which was nice. It was a whole different world than I had ever really experienced. I really, really had some great mentors throughout the few years there that kind of helped shepherd me through the industry and get to learn the ins and outs of it. And then after I had kind of did a stint in IT, I continued along that path, but more into like development. So I went over to the bank, and led a team of, developers, like .NET developers actually, and we developed applications, web-based applications for the bank. And it was cool. It was exciting. It was, you know, cutting edge. You never stop learning. And I think that was one of the things that appealed to me about technology is that you think you know it all. And there's like always just somebody's one step ahead of you. And it's like, oh my God, I got to catch up. I got to learn this. I have to learn that. So that really is what enticed me. And then Chad and Jared had this crazy idea to make a video game. And so that was back in around 2013, mm-hmm. when the indie scene really started to explode. I remember going to see Indie Game the Movie, that really featured Jonathan Blow's work and Phil Fish and the Super Meat Boy guys. And so that really was a pivotal moment in time when we're like, oh my God, you know, this is just tangible. This is it's palpable now. So we started, the three of us, and we actually spent, you know, there's, we keep belaboring the idea that we had no money when we started and this and that. We had no money needed. So we literally spent our life savings to hire an offshore developer, a programmer to help us with a demo, mm-hmm. and just poured our mm-hmm. hearts and souls in it and wanted it so badly that although we didn't have any education in classical animation, we taught ourselves. We watched a ton of tutorials online, ordered a bunch of books. I mean, a full bookshelf of, you know, books on animation and things like that. And I think that when you are so passionate about something and want it so bad, like you can't think of anything else. And so in the moment, it was just like, okay, let's learn how to do this. Let's learn how to do transitions. Let's learn about, you know, in 1930s animation, there were errors in it. So let's throw a couple of frames throughout the game that flash to something else quickly or learn how to do blinks. And it was just a passion. There was no ulterior motives. There was no, you know, the game industry is makes so many billions of dollars every year. Let's hop on that bandwagon. It was none of that. And so in the moment, everything felt within our reach. There was nothing was out of reach or nothing wasn't, you know, it wasn't unattainable. So I say that in that moment. And now looking back in hindsight in terms of how much work actually went into this, I'm like, oh my God, how did we do that? How did we pull that off? Like, it was a lot of work, but we just took it one day at a time.
Yeah, awesome. So I noticed that I read a bunch of stuff about you, you know, doing my research, all that stuff prior to the interview. And it seems like you were the one to put structure and organization behind the process of making the game. Did that come naturally to you or was it kind of hard?
No, it luckily it did because I'm a bossy person. And I use that and I spin that in a very positive way. We all have. So our core kind of executive team, we're all family, so there's that dynamic to have to deal with. But again, it was actually a good thing. We all kind of speak the same lingo. We know each other's where our strengths and weaknesses of one another and things like that, and where we can help out. Luckily for me, just being in a management position my entire career almost, I was really strong with that. Whereas Chad and Jared were really, Chad is like, and phenomenal with the creative stuff. And you know creative people, right? Like he will just be like, no, it's not good enough. Try it again. And it's like, no. We have timelines we have to meet here. And then there's Jared on the flip side who's really good with like the game design and testing and precision of gameplay and stuff. So he would, you know, the forefront of his mind wasn't a timeline or budget or things like that. So I think we just all complemented each other really well. I love doing that stuff. Like taking on that producer role was super, super exciting. I love art, but it was a nice switch to be able to, you know, spend half a day drawing, hop over to my desk and take all these, you know, business development calls or calls with PR or marketing and things like that. And then also crack the whip on these boys.
Got to keep them in line to get that game out the door, right?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what would have happened, honestly. had we not really buckled down and put together like a project plan and been like, no, like we actually have to adhere to this. There's no wavering.
Yeah, exactly. And you come from all different backgrounds. Was it difficult starting a project that, you know, you had so many different disciplines that weren't necessarily related to game design and the video game industry?
It didn't work in our behalf. So like, you know, for example, we didn't have the experience, we didn't have the connections, or, you know, we were total noobs in the industry. You know, we don't know all of these different summits that go on and conferences and all the networking that goes on. We knew nobody. So there wasn't an asset. But the flip side of that is that, you know, some of the skills that you learn in every different trade or, you know, line of work can be transferable. So for instance, and speaking for myself, being at the bank, you also have a ton of exposure to budgeting, financing, things like that. Like I had to manage a budget for a team of 30, do you know what I mean? And then, managing people, managing their timelines, you know, all of that. So that was a transferable skill. Likewise for Chad, he ran a marketing and advertising agency. So a lot of the design and like the keen eye on elements that, you know, within the game that look good and placement and UI and things like that was an asset. And with Jared, he's just brilliant in terms of gameplay. So while he was working construction at like a family construction business, mm-hmm. All day long he'd be working, but reminiscing or on games that he was playing, or was an active, super active gamer and like playing all night and things like that. So I don't think it worked against us, but it was okay. It was hard to break into the industry with not and having the experience, but interesting. You know, every person I meet, I'm just kind of like wide-eyed and being like, oh my God, like, we know you, even though, you know, we've never met, or we follow a lot of people and things like that. So, yeah.
Seems like an awesome team-building exercise. You got to work with a team of developers from Illogica in Montreal, if I read correctly?
Yes.
Ah, what was it like working with them?
They are so good. They're phenomenal. It was instantly like they're as if they're family as well. Like just such a great group. They really complemented almost every area that we needed. So in the last, I would say, 8 months of development, mm-hmm. we really had to ramp up and, you know, hit the ground running a little bit harder, even though we were, you know, I felt like it was a 4-year sprint, to be perfectly honest. But the last 8 to 9 months, we really had to amp it up. And Illogica literally saved the day, from programmers to producers to help augment. Like, you know, there were times where, or weeks rather, where I couldn't even touch my email or touch my computer or anything like that, because I had to be at my drawing desk all day long. And so they picked up on that instantly. There was very little ramp up time or like knowledge transfer or something like that. They really figured it out for themselves. Which obviously helped us when we didn't have a lot of hands on deck to train them. We are totally indebted to them and look forward to continuing to work with them.
Is there anything in particular, like nugget of knowledge that you think your team passed on to them, or that they passed on to you for this whole game development cycle?
I'm not sure what we would have passed on to them. Maybe what not to do. No, I'm kidding. That's an interesting question. I'd like to ask them that. Maybe, you know, sometimes coming from, I keep deferring to the bank because it's just a totally different environment and totally different world than what this is, or what, you know, at least Studio MDHR is. So maybe, you know, sometimes you have to look at whether or not there are too many cooks in the kitchen and too many lines of management and too many, you know, bureaucracy and red tape and things like that, and process and change requests. Like it's all good and everything kind of serves a purpose, but maybe there's sometimes too much. Mm-hmm. So we, on the other hand, went the complete opposite way, and we were very flexible, very agile. You know, we could change things at the drop of a dime because we didn't have all of these, you know, processes in place. So I'm not saying Illogica is like that, but maybe just being a bigger organization that they are, they probably do have quite a bit of that. So maybe they've learned to be a little bit more agile, I guess. Again, not speaking out of, like, they did not say this, and I'm not saying that, but that's maybe one thing I can think of. But, on the flip side, we did learn quite a bit from them in terms of, like, just the organization really thinking well ahead, and their experience served to be, you know, invaluable, especially during our certification process. They knew it in and out. It was uncharted territory for us. We didn't really have a good grasp in terms of how much has to go into certification. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. we read the manuals and we hear and stuff like that, but they helped us a lot in terms of being like, hey, this is what can happen. You need to prepare for that. You need to adjust your timelines to, you know, you could fail in the last leg of it. You're told, you know, it's good for 3 weeks, and in the last leg there's this critical bug that is like, no, you failed. So, their experience served to be invaluable.
What's life been like post-launch of the game? It seems like you're getting a lot of fan art.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? Have you seen any of it?
Oh my God, have I
it's
ever.
It's so cool. I would say that's like our favorite thing of all time is the fans in general are blowing us away. But seeing the fan art and people's interpretation of different things, I have a very soft spot for kids. And so seeing, you know, kids that are 8, 9, 10, even younger, sending us, even in the mail, not just online, in the mail sending us cards of, like, their adaptations of Cuphead or, like, some potential future characters. And it's just so creative. And I just, I can't, it sounds so hokey to be like, it's so exhilarating, and it feels, this is what makes you feel like you succeeded, is when you've reached people who are picking up a paper and a pencil and a piece of paper, and they're drawing, and they're telling you how, you know, you've inspired them, and stuff like that is just, like, that is the coolest thing in the world.
And we're speaking now, it's actually pre-International Women's Day, though March is International Women's Month, which is super awesome. And the fine friends at Xbox Canada put this conversation together for us. But you're actually speaking at a panel on March 8th with a bunch of other women in the video game industry. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it is on March 8th. It's at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. It's going to be, it's co-hosted with Microsoft and Xbox Canada and Ubisoft Toronto. So it's my first time going there. I'm really looking forward to getting kind of like a little bit of a tour and meeting some people there because we've always looked up to Ubisoft. But yeah, it's going to be in a panel with some brilliant minds, just talking about women in the industry, celebrating, you know, how far we've come, talking about how much farther we have to go. So yeah, it should be interesting. We had a little bit of a call to kind of meet one another, you know, not in person, but on the phone. And, I personally and selfishly am just super eager to hear them talk. Do you know what I mean? So while I'm on the panel, I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to learn more about you and your perspectives, because we all come from totally different backgrounds and, you know, trades and stuff like that. Like I'm more on the art side. We have somebody from writing, somebody who's a producer, or somebody who owns something, their business. So it's going to be a lot of different perspectives. It's going to be, I think, for women especially and men. You know, this is not just something that, I think one of the things that the common perceptions is, oh, International Women's Day is to women talk to other women and hear them talk. No, it's for our brothers, fathers, sons, everybody to hear the things that we need to do, you know, together, communicate with one another and, you know, further this agenda. So it's for everyone, not just girls in tech, and yeah, I'm really excited about it. You can tune in live. It's going to be broadcast on Mixer on Thursday, again 6:30 Eastern time.
Great, we'll be sharing the heck out of that on the Girls on Games social media.
Oh, channels. Awesome!
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm not in Toronto for that, but I will be watching from afar.
Oh, good.
Yeah, totally. All right. Thank you, Maya, so much for being part of this conversation. I really enjoy it and been totally admiring everything that you guys have been doing at Studio MDHR. Been, you know, ever since I remember being at that E3 press conference in 2013, seeing the first teaser trailer and being like, what is this? When can I play it?
Oh, finally, the day has come. Oh, well, thank you so much. And honestly, the sentiment is reciprocated. We look up to everything that you do and, you know, listen to the podcast and everything like that. So thank you so much for reaching out and chatting. I hope to get to meet you in person.
Yes, thank you.
And it's time to close out this show. Of course, before I let you go, I want to thank, of course, our wonderful website hosting partner, Fun.io. They do wonderful website hosting from all types and sizes of websites. You can go and get something small, like a WordPress blog, or maybe something bigger. You need a VPS server, you know, dedicated just for you. So go check them out for that. Stream Team, what's going on, Simon? Everything good?
Well, go watch Ali Rage, because that's pretty entertaining.
That is pretty entertaining.
I'm sure there's VODs out there, so... Mixer.com/ABitBlonde. That's pretty cool. I mean, apart from that, girlsongames.tv, everyone's streaming, so check it out.
Lovely. Catherine, what's going on our website?
Well, our contributor, Elizabeth, went to KatsuCon. So some of her coverage has started to trickle in. We've got some cosplay photos up. My favorite is the Doki Doki Literature Club one.
It's perfect.
Just the full crew. It's just, as soon as I saw that photo, I was like, that needs to be the photo, the top photo for this. Oh, please.
I 100% want to get the Just Monica shirt just for Comic-Con.
Oh, the Just Monica, okay.
Yes.
Yes.
So good.
I love it.
So yeah, there's that. Upcoming articles, if they might already be up while when this episode comes out. If not, they'll be coming out really quickly. It's four female artists that she discovered there.
Ooh.
And we have an interview with a cosplayer that I forgot his name off the top of my head.
That's okay. I'm sure it's on the website.
It will be on the website. Great, great interview. So all of that is on girlsongames.ca, plus all our back catalog of review. If you haven't already seen Simon's video of his review for the massive 49-inch QLED Samsung display.
That was a mistake.
You're ruined, aren't you?
Now I'm looking at ultra-wide monitors.
He's ruined.
Yeah. That was a mistake.
Spoiled.
I should not have that in my hands for that long.
Thanks, Kat. Well, before I let y'all go, of course, I want to give these voices the chance to shout out their social media handle so you can follow them on all the different platforms. Plus, you know, maybe go check out and watch them rage while they stream. Kat, where can people track you down?
I am CSDESBINS, CS de Bien, on Twitter and Instagram. And if you're on Twitter, check out the pinned tweet. It's a whole thread of the silly shit I put as my Skype status at work. So enjoy.
Allie, how can people track you down?
I'm 8-Bit Blonde, pretty much everywhere on the internet, including Xbox Live, Twitter, and Mixer.
Simon, how about you?
I also have some pretty cool Skype phrases, but you know, who cares, whatever. I am GOG Simon on Twitter. I don't know why I'm so fucking sassy tonight. I'm fucking
What's
high.
With the sass?
I don't know,
but I love it.
GOG Simon on Twitter, and I also host an esport podcast called The Buffs and Nerves, which is a Buffs and Nerves on Twitter.
And I am Leah Jew, our most social media platforms, GOG Leah on Xbox Live and Mixer. Eventually I will stream again. I know, it happens. But of course, do you want to know everything there is to know about Girls on Games? You can track us down on Facebook and Twitter at The Girls on Games. We are just Girls on Games on Instagram. Discord.me/Girls on Games to continue this lovely conversation and more. But if you ever need to know anything at all, you can find it at our home base. That is our website, girlsongames.ca. A little programming note. Next week, we're not going to be doing a show because I'm actually going to be on vacation and there's a lot of things going on. So we're just going to take a little break for a week. But we'll be back the week after. So stay tuned. And you never know. There might be like, we'll be pushing Buffs and Nerves and stuff. So you can go listen to that. Check that out. So before I let you all go, I just want to say thank you to you, the listener, to the lovely faces on our digital table talking all the time. This has been a wonderful episode. It's been a long week, and I always appreciate doing this with these fine folks and having this conversation about video games because it puts me in a very good mood for the rest of the night. So thank you, and thank you for listening. So now I'm gonna go play some games. So ciao, have a great one. We'll talk soon.
Bye
bye, bye.